Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
We are hunters, anglers, riders, and sometimes chefs. Our passion for the outdoor lifestyle motivated the foundation of Harvesting Nature, which serves as a media outlet built to inspire and educate the outdoor expert and novice alike. Our podcast focuses on the technical side of cooking wild fish and game, while also incorporating adventures and lessons learned from our pursuit of wild meat. Join us on our journey of harvesting nature.
Hello, everybody. This is Corey. I'm your host today for the Harvesting Nature Wild Fish and Game podcast. Today is a special edition coming to you from my living room in front of the nice and toasty fire. With us today is my good friend and first-time deer hunter, JC.
Hey, everybody. It's good to be on.
We spent the weekend hunting for deer and squirrels in Pennsylvania. We're in northwest Pennsylvania this weekend. This weekend opened the early season muzzleloader. And the early season, or the muzzleloader season for bear. So we were out. JC had his bow. He was looking for deer, and I had both my bow and my muzzleloader looking for bear or deer or buck, anything that walked in front of me. So we wanted to talk to you about JC's first experience bow hunting. We were out 2 days, morning and evening each day, and then and midday for both days we went out for squirrel. Unfortunately, we didn't harvest anything, but that's not bad. But I think JC learned a lot this weekend. So we'll talk about each of the hunts, just kind of do a recap of our weekend. Get JC's take as a new hunter and what he feels he learned, what do you do differently, and his overall experience. So we went out Friday morning, which was the day prior to the opening of the muzzleloader and bear season. So we're only bows, and we went behind my house, and I think it was not the best day for a new archery hunter to be out archery hunting, as it was pouring down rain as we were making.
No. It started okay, and then as soon as Corey walked away to go set up, it poured down rain.
it was not ideal conditions for a new archery hunter. It was wet and cold. I think at one point it was freezing rain.
Yeah.
But I think JC had an exciting morning.
Yeah, actually, like Corey said, it wasn't ideal conditions. Like in my head, I pictured nice, crisp autumn morning, sun coming up and everything, and looking actually really nice out. Unfortunately, once the light came up, it was gray. And like I said, as soon as like Corey showed me where the stand was and started to walk off, it literally just started pouring. But one thing that it probably helped me was it masked a lot of sound that I was probably making not knowing that I was making it. And I think that may have even helped us going in, because looking back on yesterday evening and both the morning and afternoon today, it was loud walking in.
Yeah, it was a dry. Lot
quieter, I think, walking in
because definitely.
Everything was wet and mushy.
Definitely. So I spent a lot of time this July and August scouting and setting stands and moving stands in prep for JC coming up this weekend. What I neglected to do was find a spot in the general vicinity where he was hunting for myself. So Friday morning, I got him up. We got up into the stand. I got him up into the stand. Went back down the trail. I knew I wanted to be on the trail, you know, just off the trail, because I think the deer use that trail quite a bit.
Yeah, I that's where I hunted again tonight. And it walking up, because it was daylight this time, there were tracks all through that trail.
Yeah, knowing that, because I've noticed that every time when I'm up through there, it's like, okay, I want to be able to see that trail so I can shoot something that's coming down that trail. So I walked down the trail a ways, what I thought was far enough away from JC that I wouldn't interfere with his hunt. And I, you know, went off the trail 10 yards, and it was the perfect spot, but it was the worst spot. Because when that freezing rain came through, like, I put my head, I have a little like blind, it's from Allen Company, it has like tent stakes. It's not a pop-up blind where you sit in it. It's just
about
like
2 feet high. Or
yeah,
something,
it's like
right?
2 feet high, and it just kind of shields your view or the animal's view from you. But when you sit on the ground, your head still kind of sticks above it. So I got that set up, and I sat down on the ground, and you know, it was just starting to get light, and then that freezing rain came, and so I put my head down. So, you know, trying to stay warm, trying to keep the rain from, you know, hitting me in the face.
Or down the back of your neck.
Yeah, I put my hood up so it wouldn't go down the back of my neck.
I had my hood down the entire time. And I also didn't have a rain jacket or anything on. I was just in wool.
But, like, when that freezing rain stopped, I lifted my head up and I looked to my left. And they're staring at me like 15 yards away is a deer. And it was the other bad part about that spot was it was pretty thick. So I don't know if it was a buck or a doe, but it was by itself. And as soon as I made eye contact with it, it just ran back the way it was. So it was a perfect spot, and that deer went right there.
What time was it when that happened?
It was still early.
Like
that might have been
around 8?
It was before 8, I think.
Okay.
So, yeah, like, it was perfect spot because that's where the deer were. But it was the worst spot because that was right where the deer were. But I think you had a little more exciting morning than I did.
Yeah, I mean, because I was so wet, it was super exciting because I was like, I wanted to stay out long and, like, make sure that I got, like, that morning hunt in. But, like, at the same time, I was like, this is cold. This is, like, wet. And I couldn't stay dry. But then, like, the rain sort of let up a little bit. It got a little bit brighter out. And about 7:50 in the morning, all of a sudden, this doe just comes, like, crashing through the woods. Stops probably about between 20 and 30 yards in front of me. Well, actually behind me, but I had turned around in the stand because Corey had told me when we first set up that the deer would be coming down the mountain or down the hill. So I made sure that I was sort of looking in that direction. So I was standing at this point, but standing looking like with the tree to my face basically and sort of peering around it. this doe comes crashing in, sort of stops, and then runs out to my right, stops, looks around. Maybe it saw me, I don't know, but it took off into the trees off to my left. Probably about, it seemed like it was forever, but if I looked at my watch, it wasn't even 8 o'clock yet, so that 10 minutes hadn't even gone by. I just decided to peer around the tree that was in front of me, and what I thought was a huge buck, but I counted probably seven, 8 point, and nice looking buck, and it was right there in front of me, probably out to 20 yards, but there was a lot of tree cover, and I think I popped my head around too quick, and it looked at me, and I just froze, and then it sort of went back to what it was doing. It looked away, and I ducked behind the tree. I thought it was going to keep coming right, so I sort of set up for it to come right. It came left, and then it went behind a tree with a whole bunch of leaves on it. So at that point, I was able to draw back and then sort of get sighted in on it, and it kept moving, and it didn't stop. But at one point, it was completely broadside, but it wouldn't stop moving, and I didn't feel comfortable shooting at something that was moving.
I think that was a wise decision.
Yeah.
Did you make a noise to try to get it to stop?
Yeah, I did. I sat there and went, but it didn't, it almost didn't phase it. I think it was on the scent of that doe and was just so messed up trying to follow that doe that it didn't really care. But it kept moving and then started to quarter away from me. And afterwards, I was telling Corey about this. He's like, that's a really good shot if you can place it where you need to. And I hadn't really thought about it, but I was like, it's quartering away. I'll never be able to hit it because it's a smaller target. So it kept going off to the left, and then it got on the scent of that doe, and then it was gone. And so I let down, and through that entire thing, I was really calm until I let down and hung up my bow. I started shaking so bad that, I thought I was going to shake myself out of the stand. So, I had to sit down. Yeah, it was really fun. It was a good morning. But by that time, it was only 8 o'clock. That whole thing happened within a span of 10 minutes. And then I didn't see anything until that evening.
Yeah, I think we got out of the woods early.
Yeah, it was cold.
Yeah,
it was wet
and cold, and so came home.
Since we didn't have breakfast, Corey whipped up some scrambled eggs and squirrel chili.
Squirrel chili. The squirrel chili is on the Harvesting Nature website. I had some leftover from when I originally made it, so I froze it and preparation for this weekend, but I just scrambled some eggs and then threw the chili on top.
Yeah, that was some good chili. I guess you had some stuff in from your garden too, right? Peppers.
Yeah, the sweet peppers, tomatoes. I have a couple cayenne peppers in there. Are from my garden. I'm trying to think if there's anything else. I think that's the majority of it. Then we tried a new spot, a spot that I had never hunted before, but I had scouted this summer, and I felt pretty confident. It seemed to be close to bedding. You could get to this stand pretty easily without making too much noise because it's on a path, like an old logging path or something that you can follow in basically right to where you need to be. So I was pretty confident about that spot that you would at least seen something.
And I did. As soon as I got to the top of the stand and put my bow down to put the bow hanger in, all of a sudden I hear this buck snorting. I don't know if it was a buck, but it was a deer. And I saw movement, and I was like, oh, you got to be kidding me. It got me already. But it was too far away and too much brush. And that was the only deer I saw that night.
I saw one deer. I was set up on the ground. And again, using the Allen, you know, quick blind. And I anticipated the deer. I set up so I was facing the way that I thought the deer would come. And it was, I figured they would come out of this thick stuff and head kind of towards the field. And I was in a little bit of an opening between the thick stuff and the field. And I thought, okay, I'll catch them coming through the edge there in this little transition zone. And I'm sitting there and all of a sudden I hear something right off to my right. And 10 yards off to my right, there's this buck walks through. And it was a young buck. It was a year and a half. You could have basket rack 6 points, and where we're hunting, it has to be three up, so you can't count the brow tine. So it's have 3 points on a side, not counting the brow tine. So it wasn't a legal buck. So I watched it. It was so close I could see the tick on its muzzle. It was engorged, so it was big, but it was that close. It walked next to me, paralleled me for a little bit, 10, maybe not even 10 yards away. And then it got to the trail that I walked up to get to where I was sitting. And at that point, it knew something was off. It kind of looked in my direction, but I had kind of hidden myself enough where it didn't have a good sight line of me, but it just knew something was there. You know, not, something wasn't right, you know? So it bounded off down, you know, another 30 yards down through the woods and then walked away. But then I didn't see anything the rest of the night. I think we spooked some coming out.
Yeah. Yeah. But we saw I saw a lot of squirrels, more than we saw when we went hunting in the midday.
Yeah. Yeah. So we finished up our morning hunt, came back, had breakfast, and then grabbed the 20 gauges. We each carried 20 gauge and we went up the road, try to get some squirrels. I saw one on that first strip of woods. I missed, of course. And then we hit another area.
We saw that one, which like probably should have done that going into that first area. Just sat and scoped it out instead of moving through it so quickly.
Yeah, we tried to do the still hunting, see if we could kind of bump something up and then try to sneak up on it, but that didn't work. And then we went to another spot where I've gotten several squirrels this year with the kids, and
we sat for like 10 minutes or something. Saw that one up in the tree, and I went up to go get it, and by the time I got under us, I actually saw where it was, and like I only saw its tail, and if I were to take a shot, I would have shot the branch right underneath it, and it probably would have been fine.
Belly down on the branch, it knew we were there. So we,
I think it was an eye shot, and then
I shot because I figured my shot wouldn't hit it, and you could get it when it moved, but that didn't work.
No.
Then we chased after. Well, you chased after a couple more that we. That we saw, but no luck. And then this morning, it was cold. It was cold this morning.
Yeah, it was really nice putting on cold boots and cold clothes that we left outside.
Yeah, leave them outside so it doesn't get the sense of the house. But yeah, I think it was like 20 in the 20s.
Wait, was it?
Yeah, it was like 28. It was cold this morning.
Did not know that.
Yeah.
I guess that explains the frost. It hadn't been below freezing.
It was cold.
Yeah. What did we have for dinner last night?
Oh, yes. So, was it last weekend? I went duck hunting with another friend, and I am a novice duck hunter. I think that's pretty obvious. But we were out in the morning. It was the opening day of duck season, and we each nearly went through a box of shells and came back with one merganser. And what happened with that is, So we're set up on the stream that the ducks fly up and down. There's a big swamp at the top end of the stream, and then it flows into a bigger river. So and for whatever, you know, they're always flying up and down the stream. But we were set up on the edge, so all of our shots were passing when the ducks are flying as fast as they can go. And so it was tough shooting. We were getting near where we're getting about ready to leave, and a group came through, and we thought we might have winged one because they landed, you know, 100 yards downstream from us. So I crossed the stream and walked down that way, and I thought, well, even if it's not wounded, hopefully I can jump them and scare them back up to where my friend Jeremy was sitting. And that's exactly what happened. They all flew up. None of them were winged. None of them were injured. And they went right past him, and he shot three times, and he missed three times, which was pretty much par for the course for the day. So I made my way back up, and I was crossing the stream, and there was guys right above us hunting, you know, 100, 200 yards upstream from us hunting. And they started shooting. I'm standing right in the middle of the stream, and they started shooting. So I actually I can see the ducks coming. I actually have a straight-on shot. I'm not a passing shot, so I actually hit that one. And it ended up being a merganser. And everything that I've read, you know, you always see things about mergansers or coots, how they taste terrible, they're fishy, they're trash birds. But what I've read is you can't treat them like a mallard, where a mallard has the fat and the skin are really good on a mallard. With a merganser, you have to trim all the fat away. You have to take the skin off. You can't leave the skin on. So I breasted out the bird, and I thought, why not country fried merganser? So that's what we had for dinner last night. So I pounded it thin with the meat mallet, seasoned it. What did I use? I think I used Tacticalories Bosco.
Yeah, because all the Traeger stuff was solid in the can.
We got some moisture to it. Did flour, egg wash flour. And then I just got some beef tallow. So I, in a cast iron skillet, I melted down the beef tallow.
How many pounds of beef tallow?
It's a gallon. Is that like 8 pounds? I don't know. Oof.
Water is 8 pounds per gallon, right?
I don't know.
I forgot that. I learned that in elementary school and haven't used it since.
But so I have a lot of beef tallow. I got it off Amazon.
Was it next day? Prime?
I don't think that. It was like 2 days.
2 days. Oh, that's pretty fast.
I'm looking to my wife for confirmation. It's 2 days. But yeah. Fried it in that. Came out a nice golden brown. While I was doing that, you cubed up some butternut squash, hit it with some olive oil, salt and pepper, and cinnamon, put that in the oven to roast them. And then, yeah.
Made a gravy too.
Yes, made the gravy. I was a little scared about making the gravy.
We did it from scratch. We didn't follow a recipe.
Yeah,
have been the issue. Yeah. But
typically I burn like when I cook in the cast iron with oil, I end up burning it, so the gravy wouldn't come out any good anyway. This for the beef tallow didn't burn. So I added a little bit more beef tallow, flour, you know, just like you would with a gravy, and then milk. But I put just a little bit of milk in, and it turned this weird consistency. I was like,
it almost looked like oatmeal.
It did.
It was probably the same consistency and like lumpiness too. And like, I think the two of us like panicked. We're like, what do we do?
But I just added more milk and it came out good.
Salt and pepper. It was really good.
Put that over the country fried merganser. I also fried up some deer heart in the tallow before I made the gravy. just you know, to have, because I only had one duck, so
yeah, those weren't big breasts on that merganser.
No, they weren't very big. No, so that's what we had for dinner. It was pretty good.
Yeah, it came out really good. That's the second time I've had heart, because was that 2 years ago, something like that? You and I went fishing, and you sent me home with like a deer heart. I cooked that up myself, not knowing what the heck I was doing, and overcooked the living deal out of it.
Yeah. So
this was actually a lot better. I like Corey cook heart.
Yeah. You got to do it like rare, medium rare.
I did not do it rare.
You can't do it well done, then it doesn't turn out very good. I've put it in like a stew or where you just cook it down until it just falls apart, and then it's just, you know, that's good that way.
Yeah.
When you're slicing up and frying it, you don't want to overcook it. But of course, this morning when we're out deer hunting,
not knowing that, or at least me not knowing that it was 28 degrees
out. I saw a ton of squirrels this morning. I think
same here.
I could have gotten a limit of squirrels this morning. I saw black squirrel and a bunch of gray squirrels. I had a gray squirrel 3 feet from me. It climbed up the tree I was in and sat on a branch and looked at me. I tried to take a picture of it, but so yeah, that seems to always be the case. You're deer hunting, you see squirrels. Squirrel hunting, you see deer.
Yeah.
But
yeah, and this morning we got in there, like by the time Corey and I got to the stand that Corey said that I was going to be using, it like the light, it was starting to get light out, and it, like I was like, oh, I wonder if Corey's going to make it to his stand on time.
Yeah, but it was after shooting legal shooting hours by the time I got to my stand, but it was still, we were pretty far back in. There was still a lot of leaves on the tree, so
You're still hidden pretty good.
That, and I don't think I could have even shot. It was still too dark yet. You could hear the duck hunters shooting down on the stream, but it was too dark to shoot a bow. No deer this morning.
Nope. Didn't see any. I don't think we even bumped any. Or did we walking in?
We did walk in. Yeah. And then tonight, you want to...
Oh, yeah, I went to the same place that I went Friday morning. Because I sort of had, like, because I saw that buck and that doe, I was interested in going back and potentially seeing if they'd come back through. And just, I don't know, we talked about this after we were coming home from squirrel hunting, and it was like, sort of, it's a bit of a mindset, too. Like, if you have it, like, hey, like, you're confident that something's going to happen, or you have a good feeling something's going to happen, Corey was like, yeah, you're probably going to be more alert and actually sit still or wait and stuff like that. And so that sort of bolstered my decision to go back there. And so,
yeah, it's definitely a mind game. Like if you have confidence in the spot, like, yeah, I'm going to see something, you're going to sit still and pay it better attention and, you know, not move as much and, you know. Whereas if you're not confident in the spot, you know, you're fidgety. You're like, wow, why am I here? At least that's how I am sometimes. A lot of the time is if I'm not confident in the spot, I get fidgety and antsy and I just want to leave.
Yeah, that happened to me definitely this morning, and also because it was cold. And even last night I was getting fidgety because, like, I'm not seeing anything. But yeah, this evening was... Well, oh yeah, we went squirrel hunting again even before we got out there.
Yeah, we didn't see a squirrel.
didn't see any squirrels, but
we weren't out very long though.
No, but I saw more squirrels sitting. Like, I think I just got into the stand and I texted Corey. I was like, I've seen more squirrels than I saw this afternoon.
You saw a weasel last night too, didn't
yeah.
you?
Yeah, I did see a weasel. Like, I saw this. It was black and it had a long tail. I was like, that's a weird looking squirrel. And then, like, I looked at it even more. I'm like, it's got like a long body and it's like sort of like a pointy nose. And I, for some reason, I was like, when we got back, I asked Corey, I'm like, does Pennsylvania have ferrets? And he was like, you mean weasels? I was like, yeah, I guess so. Yeah, because it looked like a ferret.
But yeah, that's a pretty rare sight. I've only seen a couple while I've been on. I've seen, sounds like it wasn't a fisher. We have fisher around here.
And I can't be sure because I don't know what a fisher looks like.
Are a lot bigger. It'd be a lot bigger than a weasel.
Okay.
And I think they're more brown.
Yeah, this one was all, it looked like a black squirrel, just long body.
Yeah, that squirrel that I saw this morning was jet black. It was right below me. I got a good look at it. It was a pretty looking squirrel. I'd have liked to brought it home.
Yeah.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
But yeah, this evening, like Corey and I were saying, like it felt a little more confident going in there. And before we even left the house to go out, sort of made a plan of what we were going to do. And Corey was like, I'm going to go to a different spot because you wanted to go to someplace where you actually had a stand.
Yeah,
I didn't want to go back to that ground blind.
Yeah, I didn't feel confident on the ground. I've used a compound bow most of my life. I've killed a lot of deer with a compound bow, but I also have a crossbow. And I know some bow hunters don't like crossbows. But I like to use the crossbow because it opens up my opportunities. It allows me to hunt from the ground and not have to draw back and get busted. Because I've tried to hunt on the ground with my compound. And, you know, it's a lot less forgiving. You got to be perfect. You know, draw back just at the right time. You know, because they're eye level with you and they can...
Just a lot harder.
Yeah, it's a lot harder.
More things could go wrong.
Yeah, a lot more things go wrong. So I got the crossbow to open up, to give me more opportunities to hunt from the ground. I don't like climbing tree stands. I have one that my uncle gave me. It's like a Summit Viper or something like that. That thing's heavy. It's a pain in the butt to get set up. And I don't feel comfortable in it. So I wanted to be more mobile and hunt from the ground, and the crossbow allows me to do that. But I didn't want to do that again tonight. I wanted to be up off the ground.
But you were also carrying muzzleloader,
yeah,
and a crossbow.
We talked about that in our episode with Tyler France about the dual carry option that Pennsylvania Game Commission is allowing this year. So a properly licensed bow hunter that also has a bear tag can carry both a muzzleloader to shoot bear, a muzzleloader to shoot the antlerless deer, and a bow to shoot a buck. So I wanted everything. I was being pretty greedy, yeah. Cool. So I took both, and I had set up a stand on the edge of this field that I hunted from the ground last year and had always saw deer, and so but always made a mistake from the ground, always getting, you know, picked off or something. So I set a stand so I could get up off the ground, and I saw 20 deer tonight, at least, and one shooter buck, but nothing was in range. Everything, it's like they knew where I was at and just kind of made a circle around. They came out the corner of the field and then just kind of went straight out into the field. They never walked along the edge toward me. So I had an exciting night. I got to see a lot of deer, one small buck, one nice, it looked like a nice big tall 8-point that I wouldn't have hesitated to shoot. But I did not get a chance. But you had some exciting encounters this evening.
From being set up around like just probably like 315, 320 or something like that, and just sitting there, and like we were saying again, like I was a little more confident, so well, maybe not confident, but just had a feeling something might happen because I had already been in that area, seen some stuff. I was thinking that it might be best to, like, instead of like the other ones where I got fidgety really quick, just sit and literally do nothing. Don't try to turn around all that much, and which I still did, but
it's hard not to.
Yeah, it's really hard not to, especially when you know something could be behind. Well, think something could be behind you, but it only turned out to be squirrels and chipmunks.
It's amazing how loud they are.
Oh my gosh, they are so loud, and yeah, I didn't know chipmunks could actually vocalize that loud either. Because there was one sitting down in front of me that just kept, I think it was yelling at me. But it's just started to get dark, and well, I wouldn't say just started to get dark. It was about 6:10, something like that.
I think today sunset was 6:30, so legal shooting hours ended at 7.
Yeah, so it was just like the sun was going down, and I heard something off to my right, and I was like, it's probably a squirrel. And then I just was like, I'm gonna check it out, and looked, and this buck is coming in, and it's again because I was in that same stand that I was in Friday morning. I sort of knew the distances, so it was probably about 20 yards from me, and it came within, I'd say it was definitely under 15, probably close to 10 yards from me, and I didn't even reach for my bow yet because I probably, the way that it was coming in, it would have seen me if I would have moved that much. But I looked at it, and because it was so close, I could see that it only had two up on one side and only one on the other, not including brow tine. And I was like, are you kidding me? Like, this is that close, and I can't shoot it because it's not legal.
Like, the only deer you can't shoot is the one that gives you the perfect shot.
Yeah, and then it actually got better because it walked out into something, an area that was even more clear, right onto that same trail that Corey was talking about earlier that had all the tracks on it. And it stood there and just grazed, looked around for a total of 17 minutes, and I couldn't shoot it. But I did end up grabbing my bow at one point because I was like, okay, if things are starting to move, this might not be the only one that comes through. So I grabbed my bow, still really carefully, just so I didn't spook that one, and it could spook others that might be in the area. Got it and then sat there and watched that deer. I actually pulled out my phone and started taking a whole bunch of pictures of it. And then I look through my pictures. I'm like, it's all the same picture. I should have just taken one and called it. But it ended up going back the same way that it came in. And then I didn't see anything the rest of the night.
I wonder why it just came down and then turned around and went back.
It may have caught a whiff of me or something and then was like, I'm going to get out of here. But like, there were a couple times where it looked directly at me and I just froze, stood still. It went back to whatever it was doing.
The wind was perfect for me tonight. It was blowing like crossways and blowing into an area that I didn't expect the deer to. I knew they were going to come out of this one corner, so it was blowing away from that one corner, so it was perfect. So the deer never winded me, and they were still there until it was dark. Like I had to wait until it was too dark for them to see before I got down, because I didn't want to spook everything and blow that spot up. I wanted to get down when they didn't know I was there. But there was just so many eyes. I was I'm not sure if I did spook. I didn't hear anything. Nothing snorted at me when I left.
Yeah.
But for dinner tonight, we had venison pastrami sandwiches.
Yeah, that was... I mean, that's probably some of the better pastrami that I've ever had. And, I'm not a big pastrami guy, and so I won't necessarily go out of my way to get it. But, like, I don't know, there's something about that. It didn't... I don't know, it was just... Maybe it's because I knew that Corey had made it and, like, put the effort into it that it tasted better. But, no, it was actually really good. Yeah.
I think I used a version of Hank Shaw's recipe with my own little variations on it, but super simple. I think I did a dry brine for probably a week to 10 days, and then coated it with spices, I think mustard seed, pepper, cracked pepper, garlic powder, put it on the pellet grill, smoked it for a couple hours. I think it came out pretty good. And I've had issues before where I make it too salty. I don't think this wasn't salty.
It wasn't. It had a really good flavor to it.
Got some nice freshly baked bread, tomatoes from the garden.
Yeah, it's just nice and simple.
Yeah.
I mean, other than it actually takes a while to make the pastrami, but
it was, yeah. Well, I make it huge batches.
Yeah.
Like, I think I did three venison roasts, ball roasts, and made those into pastrami and like four or five goose breasts. Did it all in one big batch. That way, slice it up on the meat slicer and vac seal it, throw it in the freezer for occasions like this where you just want to make a couple sandwiches.
How long does that stay for, like, in the freezer? Like a few months, or can you?
I don't know. I don't think it lasts long here.
Okay. Because we go through it so quick. Yeah.
Because the kids eat it. The kids love it.
Yeah.
As I'm cutting it up, they come at me like, begging like a dog. They want a little piece. I gotta hand them each a piece. Yeah, that was good, simple. Like last night, I was tired from hunting all day. And made that elaborate dinner.
And then it was like 9 o'clock by the time we ate.
Probably. Yeah, it was later. 9 o'clock by the time we ate. And then it was close to 10 by the time we got, cleaned up and everything. And
yeah.
I was going to put a chunk of steak. I keep the muscle whole.
And cut off what you need.
Well, and roast it all as one.
Gotcha.
I was going to do that tonight. But we still had that pastrami, and I was tired. I wanted a quick dinner. I made baba ganoush.
Yeah, that was pretty good.
Yeah,
I'll have to get that recipe from you because I have some eggplant at home.
Yeah, what'd you do? You cut it in half, threw it in the pellet grill to roast it,
and then really?
Yeah.
Oh, I'll have to get mine out and do that.
Then you scrape out the meat part, garlic, olive oil.
You put some of your cayenne peppers in there, right?
Oh, yeah. I chopped up one of my cayenne peppers. Huh? Lemon juice? I don't think I put lemon juice. Did I put lemon juice? Yes, I did put lemon juice in this one. Yeah, lemon juice. Baba ganoush calls for the tahini sauce. It's like sesame seed oil.
Oh, when you said that earlier, or maybe yesterday, I thought you said tzatziki. I'm like, well, I guess like a weird ingredient for baba ganoush, but whatever. I'm not a chef.
I'm not a chef either. Although I make you call me chef. Yes, chef.
Yeah, last night I was a sous chef.
But yeah, mix that all together. It's pretty good.
Yeah, that's tasty.
Garlic, couple cloves of garlic. So my breath is pretty strong right now.
Well, it is almost Halloween, so no vampires will get him.
I did defrost that steak, so I'm going to roast it tomorrow. Mix in eggs and cheese and potatoes. O'Brien, I bought a bag. Lindsay bought a bag of potatoes at Brian and just make, and we got some tortillas, just make breakfast burritos.
That'll be a good Sunday dinner.
Well, it's breakfast.
Or breakfast, before, yeah, sorry. I was thinking.
Before you go.
Well, that'd be a good Sunday dinner too. Or breakfast.
So yeah, I tried to make it. I think I did a good job. Every meal that you had here had wild game.
Yes. Yep.
Today for lunch, we had pastrami sandwiches and the rest of the squirrel chili.
Yep.
That was a good hearty lunch.
Yeah, especially after being so cold.
Yeah, it hit the spot. Yeah. And that coffee that you brought was good. What is that?
Invader coffee. Yeah. Good stuff out of Texas.
Chocolate with a hint of cinnamon.
Yeah, Mexican chocolate.
So,
but yeah, overall, good weekend. Like, I mean, for me, just the experience of getting out there, even though I didn't get anything, just getting that experience under my belt, because like Corey said at the beginning, it's my first time archery hunting, and let alone deer hunting. So, I mean, rifle would probably have been easier, but I'll start with the harder one. But yeah, it was good. It was really good.
So what are your lessons learned from this weekend? What are your takeaways? What did you learn? What would you do again? What wouldn't you do? Are you going to update your gear or change gear out? Was there something you liked or didn't like?
I think one thing that I really learned was that everybody says oh yeah, wool will keep you warm even when wet. It's true. It actually does. And on Friday, all I had was wool on. I didn't, except for my pants, everything. Okay. And my long underwear, but my top. So my base layer top, what I had over top of that insulation, that was all wool. I was able to stay warm except when I was standing still, but I don't think anything I would have had on would have kept me warm just because it was cool out. It was wet out. But as soon as I started moving, warm. And then when we got back, my stuff was pretty much dry.
Yeah. I threw it in the dryer, but I don't think I needed to. My stuff definitely needed it.
Yeah, but I will say that wool is, I don't think I'll use anything but wool now.
Your stuff's from First Light?
Yeah. Yeah. Because I didn't have anything before. Corey was like, oh yeah, First Light's good, because you have some First Light stuff. Yes. I have a buddy I work, a coworker, he has First Light stuff. It came recommended, so I got some stuff, and I like it. It's good. It's good gear.
I still use a jacket that I got in high school, an old, cotton jacket. So
that doesn't do well in the rain. Wet.
I had a waterproof fleece or water repellent fleece underneath it, but
yeah, it gets heavy and gets waterlogged. And, I don't know, something that I would do different. There's so much stuff going through my head about what I would do different, because in my head before I came out here with Corey, I had oh yeah, I'll do it this way, just from reading stuff. And then you get out here and actually try to do it, and you're like, oh, it doesn't work that easily. Or I actually have to have done this a few times to understand how to do this thing that I thought that I could do. But definitely I want something when I'm hiking in to hold my bow. Because the way that my quiver's on it, it makes it want to twist in my hand. And it's I don't know if you noticed, Corey, I would always switch it between my left and right hand. And if there's something, I had a bow sling, I'm pretty sure, I've seen them. But yeah. I don't know if that's actually something I would need, but I think it would make it easier to get in and out. And then carry it up a tree stand too. Especially if it's, because with this ladder stand, I just carried it up instead of letting it down and hauling it up. But that was just something that bothered me as I was walking in and out. I was like, this is stupid. I don't want to hold this.
I tried to think of all the little things that an experienced hunter does or knows that a new hunter wouldn't necessarily know to do. even after, you know, reading or whatever, the old meh trick.
Yeah.
But you did make a noise, so it must have been concentrating on something else.
Well,
but
that's actually one thing that maybe in my head it sounded really loud, and maybe because my nerves had already gotten to me and I didn't notice it, I may not have done it as loud as I thought that I did. And he may just never have heard it.
That's possible.
But one thing that I was thinking about this today, that because being new to hunting, like, I don't have a tree stand. I don't have climbing sticks or anything like that. But my coworker, he let me borrow some of his climbing sticks just to, like, try it out. And I actually set up a saddle system with, like, a climbing harness that I had. And so, like, I'll go up in my trees in, like, my yard just to try it out. And I was like, oh, man, this is sort of easy. I got sort of good at doing it. But one thing that, like, I never really thought about until we went out is, like, how convenient it is to have stuff already set up and scouted out. And, like, I was like, man, like, if I had to come out here, find that tree and get up into it while being quiet, I wouldn't have done it. I would have bumped all the deer, spooked them. They would have, like, I would not have seen the three deer that I saw. Well, four if that other one that I spooked. But yeah, like, that makes it so nice not having to set that up every time you go out. Yeah. Or take it down at night.
Yeah, I love the ladder stands because you can just walk there, climb up, and sit down. That's why I hate climbers, because they're heavy and loud and annoying. And
yeah. But, like, at home, I would sit and get up in a tree in my front yard with my buddy's climbing sticks, my saddle, and I would just sort of hang up there with my bow and shoot into my backyard. So I actually got sort of comfortable doing that. And then, like, turning around so that, like, my back's to the tree, having the rope up over my shoulder to hold me sort of so I could lean out. And like, that's all fine and dandy in your yard where it's a very controlled thing. But again, like, getting out to where, like, all the branches aren't perfectly cut, or, like, even just climbing up there and trying to be quiet, because, like, I thought I was being quiet in my front yard. Yeah. I probably wasn't.
Yeah, it's just magnified once you're out in the woods. You don't realize how noisy you can be.
Yeah.
And then especially when you're paying attention to it and the woods are dead silent, and, like, every little twig snapping is like a, you know, bomb going off.
Yeah, I mean, even today, I was sitting there and, like, the wind finally died out and it was dead quiet. The chipmunks and squirrels stopped. I forget what I did, but, like, I think I caught my, like, the pull tab on my glove on, like, my pants, and it sounded like it was an echo chamber. I was like, that seems super loud. Like, you really don't know how loud you are until everything else is quiet. And then you realize, like, if you can hear it, something else can hear it too.
So, good experience, first time.
Yeah, and I'm really thankful that I had somebody to sort of, not sort of, but show me how to do this stuff. Because prior to this, I had only really done bird hunting, pheasant and duck. And the duck was by no means like an organized duck hunt. I basically just went out with it. Shotgun when I was younger, and, like, would just go around and see if I could shoot ducks.
Did you ever get any?
No, never. My grandfather did, though. He was actually a pretty good duck hunter. But yeah, I never did. And then, like, pheasant hunting was just, I'd go out with, like, a buddy in college and go pheasant hunting. And, like, we'd go with, like, his dad and some of his dad's friends, and they had dogs. So, like, hunting over dogs, like, it made it really easy. But, like, deer hunting was something that my dad did, but he stopped when I was born. So, like, I never got introduced really to it until I got older. Like, now being 34, it's sort of intimidating when, like, a lot of people you've talked to that are hunting and have been hunting for, like, years since they were kids and, like, their dad showed them. But it's, like, it's intimidating because you're, like, me, I'm in my 30s. I'm like, I can do this. Like, this shouldn't. And then you, like, think about it. You're like, I have no idea, like, what I'm doing. Like, and, like, going to school and, like, you think, like, oh, yeah, I got experience. I got, like, I know how to do things. And, like, this is a whole area where, like, if I even try to think of how to, what I'm doing or what comes next, it's literally drawing a blank in my head because I just don't know. I don't have that experience. And that's sort of a, being an adult, I think that's a, like, thing that can deter a lot of people from even just trying it, even if they want to. But having someone like Corey who's willing to take a newbie into the woods and show him what to do, like, even before I got my bow, Corey was patient with me, like, me asking dumb questions about, like, bows and because bows were completely new to me. Because I grew up shooting, even though, like, I didn't hunt, I shot a lot. And I understand rifles, pistols, shotguns. But when it came to bows, I was, like, lost with that, too. But Corey was really helpful in that. And I think having someone that can sort of mentor you, doesn't matter your age, is extremely valuable. And I think the right person, too. Because, like, you could have somebody mentor you who just has no patience at all. But probably having a mentor is better than none at all. Right. So, yeah.
I don't know. Maybe if it's not the right mentor, they could put the person off from hunting, potentially.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and even though I didn't get anything, it actually makes me want to get out more. Good. Yeah. I'm actually sort of bummed that I don't have any meat to take home.
Yeah, well, I was going to give you...
You don't have to do that, but...
I was going
to
give you a couple things. I have a bunch of packages of pastrami left. I'll give you a package of that. Ooh,
heck yeah.
We made Hank Shaw's, what was it, a coconut pheasant curry. So I'll give you some of that.
Oh, that'd be awesome, man. But yeah, like, I was actually excited to, like, try some of, like, Harvesting Nature's recipes, Meat Eater recipes, because I got a Meat Eater cookbook for Christmas, and, like, I really wanted to try some of that stuff. And I've tried making it with, like, stuff from the store, but it's like, I feel weird not using wild game for it. I was really excited, but, like, I still got opportunities.
2B has the unit that you hunt in, yeah, or that you're, where you live, has extended seasons. So I think you could have hunted deer September 19th.
Yeah. It was opening. I could have gone out. It was really hot, and I honestly wasn't ready.
You can hear Penny in the microphone. lips.
Yeah, Corey's dog just jumped up on my lap and was, like, right in my face. I could have gotten out really early, which would have been cool. But I don't think I was ready because I didn't really have anybody to show me.
We had talked about doing another hunt like this in November, so we'll see. Hopefully we can do that.
I might get maybe a warmer jacket.
Yeah.
Or something that, or even pants, because, like, even this morning was cold, and that really taught me something. Moving is completely different than sitting still. Because, like, skiing, I'm fine when I'm skiing. I could wear set of long johns, a shell pant, no other insulation, a fleece, and my shell jacket, and be completely fine skiing in, like, I've done that in, like, sub-freezing weather and been fine. Can't do that just sitting still.
Yeah. Yeah, it gets cold pretty quick.
Yeah.
Is there anything else? Last thought?
You know, I think the biggest thing, and I touched on it, was having someone like Corey to show me. I'm super thankful for that.
I'm happy you made it up. It was a lot of fun, and it having knowing that you were coming up gave me more excuses and opportunities to get out in the woods to scout and to prep and to set stands and to check new areas and a whole host of things that if it was just me, other obligations would have gotten in the way. Obligations or responsibilities, however you want to word that. Well, thanks for coming up. I hope.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
I hope hope we can do this again soon. And to everybody listening, make sure you are subscribed to the podcast. Give us a review. Tell us what we're doing right. Tell us what we're doing wrong. And as always, follow us on our various social media accounts. We'll talk to you later.
Think with four of us spread out on a tiny island that the task of tagging a whitetail would not be a big thing, but as I've learned, no matter where I've been, whitetails can be damn tricky.
Pursuing wild game in wild places. Tune in to Hunt Stand Presents Saturdays at 8:30 p.m. Eastern. Waypoint TV, the destination for outdoor entertainment.
I'm Will Cooper, and you're listening to Hunt Stand's Make Your Mark podcast on the Waypoint Podcast Network. Stick around as I bring you more stories and interviews from veteran hunters and industry professionals who inspire us all to be better equipped in the woods and in life.